struts like John Wayne, resembles Jim Carrey, and dresses like he's visually impaired. Because he is. Insight. Insight with Mark Farrell on the Progressive Radio Network.
What an absolutely gorgeous morning it is right here in New York City. Wow, a top tenner indeed. If I could, I would be jumping in a car and heading right to the beach. It's that nice. Good morning. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network, an incredibly cool, compelling, and inviting show for you today, including a voice that may sound familiar to you, Dr. Diana Wiley. Yes, another voice on PRN. She's written a new book, Love in the Time of Corona. A great book, right? Advice from a sex therapist. No, that's not me. For couples in quarantine. That would be me, a couple in quarantine. And we're going to be talking about my life, how it's been turned upside down because I got a puppy. Aw, yeah, cue the aw sound effects. Well, it has its moments, but, you know, it's not been the highlight of my year so far. He's a good dog overall, but he is making me pull my hair out a little bit. International Radio Day. Very, very cool, huh? Yeah, we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about the Democratic National Convention, the DNC this week. I thought so far has been doing pretty good. And last night was historic. Nancy Pelosi, Kamala Harris, Barack Obama. Oh, my Lord. He slayed it. Elizabeth Warren. Even Mrs. Clinton. She did a good job. Not looking too good, though. I feel bad for her. Well, not too bad. But, you know, she's been through the ringer. But anyway, we'll get to that. So anyway, we will be speaking to Diana Wiley, Dr. Diana Wiley, in just a few minutes. But first, of course, we got to hit a bunch of things here. International Radio Day, you know, makes me think about being an intern in New York City in radio. And that's how I started my journey into this career that's been nothing but boring. Thankfully, I got an internship at a radio station called WPIX. FM. WPIX was 102.7. Sorry, 10. Oh, my Lord, I forget the frequency. 102. That's what they used to call it, the new 102. And it was sort of like a love song station when I got my internship there. And through my brother, he had a connection who was the controller back then. And I got the call at my radio, actually at my college dorm, that said, hey, we'd like to have you in for a interview to talk about a possible internship. So I went into this radio station in New York City in Midtown in the Daily News building. Remember the Superman movie, the Daily Planet building? This was the actual building where I worked or would soon to work. And they said, you know what? I think you'd be a good fit. Would you like to have an internship here? And ironically, the day before, I accepted an internship at a video production house. So I've sort of torn on which avenue I should take and explore. But inside of me, my gut said, you know what? I think at the radio station, it's a smaller environment, less people. I could probably get my hands on much more equipment, much more experience, and shine more, have the opportunity to be noticed. So that's what I did. I was very forthcoming and honest with him. I said, hey, listen, I'm going to accept this very gracious offer for an internship here at PIX 102, and I'm going to decline the offer that I accepted yesterday. And they were like, great, great, do what you have to do. And that was it, man. That's what started my foray into radio, and I worked really, really hard in making something for myself, making a name for myself, getting chops. So I started making commercials very, very slowly. I used to bug this guy, Billy Robinson, who's a dear, dear mentor and friend of mine for life, on how to make commercials, how to record, how to edit on tape. Yes, actual tape. I'm actually in my home studio right now recording this portion before we go live for my interview with Dr. Wiley. But the tape machine across from me is a four-track, and that's one of the machines I worked on, a four-track, multi-track tape. Now, of course, everything is digital nowadays, but it's so very, very cool that I was able to come up in an era where, you know, analog was still king. And to a certain degree, analog still has its presence, and right, in the recording industry, because nothing can produce certain sounds better than analog. Anyway, I digress. So it was a great way to get my chops. And eventually I became a production assistant. I became a production director, creative services director. And we had this remote truck that was very, very cool. The chief engineer, Andy Bader, was a brilliant guy and a real go-getter. And I'm not sure how this started. This is a question I need to ask Andy. But we started doing live broadcast for us, for our station. It was CD101.9. So that station, WPIX, evolved into CD101.9. Now I'm going to actually have to write this out and do like a historical layout, because it's very, very compelling how this whole radio is very interesting in general, how things unfold, and because it's certainly a big business, and radio stations, as you well know, are known to flip, unfortunately. So when I became an intern, it was still WPIX. During that summer of 1988, it flipped to CD101.9, which they termed Smooth Jazz CD101.9, which was a mouthful. And we soon became to be known as one of the forefront on the, certainly the FM dial, but across the nation, for attracting great artists like Sade. Let me see, who's the guy from Pennsylvania? Oh my God, his name's slipping me. But David Sanborn, like all these greats would just come and hang out at our station, because we were like one of the few stations. And then became the format became more and more popular, but a great place to claim as our own. And it was just an incredible, incredible journey to see this format, this new format, Smooth Jazz, take off. So anyway, Andy Bader, the chief engineer that I mentioned a moment ago, I guess saw an opportunity for clubs that were around New York City, landmark clubs like the Blue Note, and bigger venues like Town Hall and Midtown, that would have Grover Washington Jr. That's the gentleman from Pennsylvania who unfortunately perished years ago. Great, great guy. Great saxophonist. But all these cats, man, were just gigging everywhere. So we capitalized on it. And we would, you know, have our concert, like CD101.9 presents Sade at Madison Square Garden. And we would go and record it. And whether we would broadcast it live or just have a record it for a special show or do both. So consequently, we bought a truck, a remote truck, which was state of the art. This was really, really powerful stuff. Even nowadays, when I look back, I think about, wow, how like state of the art that we were able to broadcast live in digital quality, CD quality, which no one was able to do. So here we are. We would go, I'd say maybe anywhere from 6 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock in the morning to noon, to set up for a broadcast maybe 8 o'clock that night, because there's so much involved. First of all, getting a parking spot, wiring all the cables in, all the electrical cables, tapping into the panel, all the audio cabling that had to be done into the venue, usually sometimes into the basement, then back up underneath the stage and plugging everything in, sound checks. I mean, it was an incredibly laborious but thrilling and exciting event to do. And so I did, I cannot even fathom a guess on how many live broadcasts and or recordings we did, in the hundreds. And now we have this great platform for our station. Now we take it a step further. And because my chief engineer, Andy Bader, knew all the other engineers, we opened our door. We basically hung a shingle and said, okay, any radio station in New York and more outside, internationally, we're open for business. If you need us to do anything for you, record or do a live broadcast for you, we will. So we worked for Z100, PLJ, 1027 WNEW when it was a rock station. These are all New York City stations, all iconic stations. All of them are gone, sad to say, on International Radio Day. But many, many of the colleagues and our professional colleagues across the different frequencies are still in the industry. Most of them are. And it's incredible the opportunity that we had, because we also did international broadcasts for Radio Ireland, BBC, And so sometimes we would be up certainly throughout the night. I mean, there were days where I wouldn't sleep for maybe a day and a half or close to 2 days because we were preparing for an international broadcast. Of course, the timing was completely off, so we were up throughout the night. But what a thrill it was to provide an uplink, a microwave service, and do a recording. I remember being in a hotel in Midtown. And I don't remember what this was. This was for maybe Radio France or Radio Ireland. Not Radio Ireland, I think it was. And it was just a bunch of guys and girls, I believe, maybe like 20 or 30 people in a room talking, conversing. And I don't remember what the special show was because it had a big following in Ireland. And me and my engineer, Andy, were like, this is what they're paying us for? And we're like, okay, all right, whatever. You know, it works. But the thrill of here we are, it's, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. We're outside in a truck parked outside adjacent to the hotel, mixing this, looking at each other, going like, they are spending thousands and thousands of dollars for this. And we would just laugh. Of course, we were getting overtime and double time. And so it was all very lovable for us. I remember when the, remember the music store HMV? The flagship one in New York City opened up on 86 and Lexington. And we were there, of course. I remember being on top of this remote broadcast truck, which I will post a picture of this on the Insight page after the broadcast of this. I'm standing on top of the broadcast truck where the mast probably went up 30, 40 feet in the air, almost like an ENG, like a news truck that you see broadcast. And one of my friends walking by, and they're like, Mark, it was one of my college friends. They're like, Mark Farrell, is that you? And I'm, of course, you know, me, blind as a bat. I'm like, who is that? But it was such a vital time in my life in terms of learning so many aspects of radio, from the behind the scenes, from producing commercials, writing scripts, producing the DJs I worked with. I was not on air then. So I would be producing them, telling them how to read, the inflection, the pacing, et cetera, and then creatively putting this together. And I would work with the sales team. Sometimes I'd go out on sales calls to work with enticing a client to advertise on a station, telling them how great I can make them sound, how great I can make their commercial sound, and more importantly, how they'll get positive results by advertising on our station. So fast forward many, many years after working for all those different stations by, you know, renting out our truck through CD101.9 and meeting just countless icons and starting a talk show that Pat Prescott thankfully handed me the baton on called Dialogue. Therefore, I was taking over the public affairs program. It was just a phenomenal, phenomenal experience and something I'm eternally grateful for Pat Prescott and Andy Bader and Billy Robinson and Nick Doshi, just incredible people, just genuine, good-hearted, hardworking, caring people that love music and love radio. And it left certainly an indelible mark in my life. And then, of course, we got sold. And this begins a spiral. We got sold to a different company, which was fine, and we kept the format for probably about another 5 or 7 years. And we moved downtown, which is really, really pretty cool. We were bought by MS Broadcasting. Good company. Jeff Smolian is the president. Good guy. Fair company. Had some great general managers. And we also were based and housed with a hip-hop station, Hot 97 and WBLS. So some great people. Then now in comes a smooth jazz station. They're probably like, oh, my God, snooze fest. But on a given day, you could see, you know, 50 Cent, Sade, Kenny G, or let's see, Run DMC walking down the hallway. I mean, that's the kind of atmosphere it was. Just iconic. And I remember just saying to myself some days, like, this is just so, so special. And then, you know, interviewing all the people I interviewed. I should just do a show on that someday. All the guests I've interviewed, and we'll play some tape from that. Everyone from Chrissy Hynde from The Pretenders, Moby, to movie producers. I'm thinking, trying to think of all their names, man. Kenneth Cole, actresses, actors. Oh, my God. It's just even actually one of my favorite people in the interview, Bob. Oh, my God. I'm spacing on his last name. I have not had breakfast or coffee, folks. I am so sorry. Bob Vila. the creator of This Old House. Now, as a carpenter, a hobbyist, a woodworker, I was just addicted to that show. So having Bob Vila on my show was just something that was basically a dream come true, because I was just so thrilled that that I could have someone. This is great. I have my phone on airplane mode, but it's still coming through. How can that be? Oh man, technology. Anyway, Bob Vila is very, very cool. But the first time this ever happened was during an interview. When I interviewed someone, they actually looked at their watch. And we're like 15, 20 minutes into this. And I'm like, what? Am I boring this guy? I thought we were having a really good rapport, Bob and myself. So I stopped the interview. I said, Bob, is everything okay? He said, well, I'm sorry. I just didn't think the interview was going to be going on this long. And I have to catch a flight. I have to get on a shuttle back to Boston. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. We agreed with your publicist that you were going to speak for 45 minutes, at least spend 45 minutes on the show. He said, listen, I'm having a great time. Forget about the shuttle. I'll get the next shuttle. So in a few minutes, I felt like, you know, the earth was just, you know, stopped rotating to, oh my God, Bob Vila is taking the next plane for me. So it was pretty darn spectacular. Just the riveting interviews, all the people, all the experiences, all the concerts. It just made my my career just so very, very, very special. And then, of course, we were sold again. Sold to a rock station. Actually, no, I'm sorry. We're not sold. We flipped to become a rock station, a modern rock station. And let me tell you something. I was thrilled. I got fired. They fired me because that's what they usually do in radio, because they restart the clock. So anything that you were making in terms of severance, you still got your severance. They just want to restart the clock because that's just how they typically operate. And I got fired and rehired. Myself and one other person was rehired at the rock station. And I was thrilled. Here I am making promos for just incredible bands, MGMT, even Led Zeppelin promos, because we'd have, you know, specialty programs that we would do. And I was the guy as the creative service director that would come up with these concepts. I remember when in 2009, you know, when we had the Wall Street crisis, I came up with a theme called Rock Recession. So it was 101.9 RXP's Rock Recession, and created this whole on-air campaign. And it was just stupendous, man. Just the artists that we would have come in that would just, you know, rock my world. Sorry to keep saying the word rock, but I mean, it was so apropos. That that went on for about 5-6 years, and unfortunately, we didn't have the numbers to support the station, and then we actually got sold. And it's funny, because all those years in radio, that was probably about 17 years in radio. Let's go back to 15 years in radio. I'd worked for one owner, not sold. And everyone's like, well, you haven't worked in radio long enough if you haven't been fired. And like, sure enough, yep, got fired and hired, then fired and rehired again. So after it became 101.9 RXP, the rock station, they sold to a different company, became a news station. I got fired and not brought back. Everyone got fired. That's what they call a bloodbath. Not a pretty thing. But it was fun. We had a great time. And I can't look back with any regret. It was an incredible learning experience. The people that I met at all the stations, Hot 97, WBLS, Kiss FM, it was just remarkable. All the salespeople, all the managerials, people in management positions, just incredible people. And all the artists that came through the front door, just made just for a thrilling, thrilling opportunity. So on International Radio Day, I just wanted to reflect on how thrilling it was to be part of such a historic moment in music, historic moment in radio, and certainly a prominent point in my life to experience something so young and so varied and so colorful. We used to put on concerts like crazy, the ones I was telling you that we record, but we actually used to produce concerts at the bottom of the World Trade Center. Oh man, I got to do a whole hour on this one day, because the amount of shows that we did was mind-boggling. I used to be on top of the World Trade Center, number one WTC, and looking down from the top. That's where our master antenna was, and our master control room was on the 109th floor, 110th, 109th, I believe it was. And I remember looking over the top of the roof one day. I know most of you are like, what? You would look over the top of the World Trade Center? And I remember seeing something going down below. I'm like, what is that? And I'm like, oh, that's a helicopter. That's how high up the World Trade Center was. And what a sad story that was in terms of the window washer who perished in the 9/11 attacks. Anyway, keeping it positive, it's Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. We're talking about International Radio Day. And in just a few minutes, you're going to meet Diana Wiley, Dr. Diana. It's all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Well, maybe not the drugs and rock and roll. Well, we covered rock and roll. Okay, well, all we need to do is talk about sex, and we'll throw some sprinkles of drug conversation in there as well. Anyway, Dr. Diana's coming up next. My name is Mark Farrell. Hang out. We'll be right back.
Talk with Mark now. Call 888-874-4888. Insight on the Progressive Radio Network.
Yeah. What a beautiful day. Man, I am so psyched for Thursday. Do you have plans this weekend? You know, I have mixed emotions about restaurants being open because I'm torn. I'm dying to go to a restaurant. But at the same time, I'm like, number one, do I want to sit outside when it's blazing hot under a tent just so I don't have to cook? Yeah, sign me up. Well, I have mixed emotions, ambivalence, because number one, it's just there's so many restaurants that are overcrowded that are getting fined and or shut down. And hey, do I want to go out and spend $100, $150 on a meal and be like, you know what, I'm really not that comfortable. So my wife and I have only gone out once, but every weekend I'm kind of torn. Like, is this the weekend we're going to go out? I just really hope, obviously, health trumps everything, but it would be nice when things return to normal for the health of and safety of everyone, but and also for the sociological aspect, just to be able to get out and dine and not cook 21 meals a week. Do I sound frustrated? Well, I'm not frustrated when I talk about sex because I have a good release and an outlet. No. Don't worry. I'm not going too far about this. But, you know, there's a few things you can't get nowadays. A bike, a puppy, a pool, and actually throw in a job, too, because obviously with Corona, there are so many millions of people out of work, but it's just hard to get employment. But hopefully sex is not one of them. Yeah, let's talk about sex. Mark Farrell, happy to welcome Diana Wiley, Dr. Diana Wiley. She's a marriage and family therapist and board certified sex therapist specializing in sexual and relationship issues. Her new book is Love in the Time of Corona, Advice from a Sex Therapist for Couples in Quarantine. Dr. Diana, how are you?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you loud and clear. Are you in Seattle?
I'm in Seattle, so I got up early for you, Mark.
Oh, my God. That's great. Is it a gorgeous day there?
No, it's kind of cloudy, but the sun will come out soon. We're lucky in Seattle because it doesn't get too hot here.
Just lie to me because I have grand images of Seattle just being just a bevy of nature and like a giant state that's called Eden.
Yeah, well, you know, the Pacific Northwest is really, really beautiful. I spent many years in Palo Alto, some more years in Los Angeles, some other years in Honolulu. I had a radio show in Honolulu for 5 years, and I've been on Progressive Radio Network for 10 years.
Wow.
Laughter.
A decade. Fantastic. Listen, let's get down to the nitty gritty. I want to talk about your travel plans in a few minutes. I mean, where you've been and where you taught English, et cetera. But I imagine one of two things are happening for couples right now. Either they are kind of basking, this is an overall sense, basking in the fact that, you know what? Life was so hectic before, we didn't even have time to get it on. But now we can make the time or we have the time. And then there's the other scenario, like, I can't stand the sight of you, the sound of you. I can't wait to get away from you and get divorced.
Yeah, couples are often feeling pressures about being locked down together. And of course, the core message of my book, Love in the Time of Corona, is that to take advantage of the time in quarantine. There could be some silver linings after all.
Sure.
And there are in my book, all sorts of guidelines for couples and how they can actually strengthen their sensual and sexual connection. So, and in the process, relieve stress. I mean, there are a lot of health benefits from being sexual.
Absolutely.
We know that. So
yeah,
it's important.
There's a few things that take place in the Farrell household on a weekly basis. Number one is like, we like to drink red wine. So we only go through like a bottle, maybe two, and a very good week. And this bottle of wine we discovered, it's called Joel Gott. I think it's pretty popular, but I just discovered it recently. And I'd say to her, hey, Joel wants to visit tonight, meaning like, hey, let's have some wine tonight. And then the other thing is like, hey, it's got to happen. Yep, it's got to happen because you got to relieve stress and you just need to be loved, man.
Yes, and there are plenty of studies that show how remaining sexual really helps the couple be closer. You know, with the expression of dopamine and oxytocin and all the real feel-good hormones that come with orgasms, actually, then we have an opportunity to relieve stress and feel closer.
You know, I won the bet because the program director, Jesse, was saying it's going to take you about 10 minutes before you said the word orgasm. I said, no, it's going to be under 5.
Oh, Jesse, I'm going to talk to him later.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what's a great, not a side effect, but certainly a great component to intimacy and sex is that, yes, orgasms are great and all the other physical aspects, but just feeling closer and a better connection.
That's right. And just touching, you know, I'm still in practice and of course doing all my sessions now on Zoom. And so it's, I have couples who are younger and couples who are older, and I will say to them at the very least, lie together naked and touch each other at the very least. In chapter 4, use touch to relieve stress. There are some wonderful exercises that are based on Masters and Johnson's Sensate Focus. They were the researchers. You probably
sure.
know about this.
Of course.
And so they came up with the term sensate, lots of parts of our bodies that can be touched, and you need to slow down and touch and feel in the head and the face and the hands and the feet. And just, I even have a 95-year-old friend, and I sent this wonderful guy and his partner a book, and he wrote back after he said, we've already put your book into service. Isn't it wonderful that at 95 he's still sexually active and he's just
amazing.
Got all of his facilities? Yes. And he said, I always thought that I needed to have my genitals stimulated first, and he said, but no, it felt so good to have my body stroked, and I relaxed. And he said, if I'd only had your book 80 years ago, I would have saved myself years of
exactly.
frustration.
Sure. Well, yeah. You know, I mean, your book also touches on the power of human touch. I mean, I think it's also stems, and you're a doctor, you can speak much more professionally and insightfully about this. But I was brought up in a warm, touchy-feely family. Lots of hugs, lots of emotion. You know, we shared our emotions then and now. And as a father and parent, I certainly have instituted that along with my wife. The four of us, we express our emotions vocally and physically. And so I think that translates right down to your intimacy. Because if you don't have that when you're outside the bedroom, I think it has a different impact, because and maybe certainly more welcomed because they're not getting it outside the bedroom. But for me, I need that all the time. And then when you shut the bedroom door, you know, you need that in a different capacity in a full blown method. But in terms of going back to just the touch aspect, I mean, I know how some people don't like to be touched. And I think it goes back to, again, what we said, or what I just mentioned about, you know, their child rearing years and their teen years, about how they probably socialize within their nuclear family. But for me, I love a massage. I mean, I just love to be touched. I just love to be in awe. So I just mentioned a lot. So doctor, feel free to take a bite of any of that pie.
Well, it sounds like you were raised in a wonderful family, and I was too. And you know how fortunate we are, because to be touched, to have a demonstrative parents, and you're passing that along, it sounds like, to your children too.
Yes.
And so you have what's called secure attachment as opposed to anxious or avoidant attachment. And so your adult relationships are much better, because you don't have so many barriers and fears about intimacy. You break down the word intimacy and you have into me you see.
Oh, I so, like that.
Yeah. So, and, you know, along with touch, I think the best sex tip in the world is to listen to each other. To really True. Listen to each other.
Non-verbally and, as well.
Absolutely. But we need the talk, because if you think about it, couples don't hesitate to get books and magazines on travel, on business, on and gardening. But they probably spend less time discussing sex. They don't always talk about that. So My book has ways for couples to begin that discussion. And in fact, the first chapter is Get to Know Your Partner Better and offers some simple ways to connect.
Yeah.
Deep listening exercises and eye gazing exercises and looking at a sexual menu with things that they can choose to do and to talk about. It gives you a little platform.
I love that. If you can't go out to dinner, have dinner come to you. Sweetie, I would like option number 9, 10, and yes, number 69, please.
Oh, that's very good. Yes, of course.
And that's to stay, not to go. So listen, let's back it up a little
good
bit.
Good, Mark. That's back really, it. I like that. I'm going to.
Exactly. Let's back it up a little bit. So what about the ruts, the rituals, the kids, the laundry, the jobs? Most people are, again, working remotely. Virtually, the annoyances, the pets, the obligations. People are conditioned. There are so many distractions. I even say to my wife, she has a very demanding job, more demanding than my life in the professional sense. Mine's I'm on, or I'm off. But hers extends far past the normal hours. And so I said to her, can you please put that down so we can just talk and hang out and just hang out on the couch and hug and snuggle that way? But what about the couples who just feel so removed from the intimacy, even just being close to each other, laying on a couch together, on top of each other, sitting on each other's lap, and the excuse of, oh, we haven't done it so long, or, oh, we're just so busy.
We need to put sex on the calendar. We do that with all kinds of other things. And it's really a myth that sex has to be spontaneous. So it's important to sit down with your partner and plan a date night at home. And if you have children, it's a little more challenging, but it's doable. But to plan that date night at home and to set the scene, first of all, to put it on the calendar and make it work. It's the most likely way that you'll be having some kind of sex. And I use the word intercourse in my practice, because lots of people use sex to refer to intercourse, but I think of sex as so much more than intercourse. So, and that's the advantage True. Of giving each other a massage or slowing down and touching each other in all kinds of really sensual ways. And practicing mindfulness and setting the scene, you know, maybe having takeout food at home. I heard you earlier talking about wanting to sit outside in the heat, and that doesn't really make a lot of sense for lots of people. But get good takeout and set set the table nicely, have maybe fresh flowers and candles, and also make your bedroom look appealing.
Clutter.
Yeah,
candles,
clean up the clutter.
Candles.
Candles are really good. And even the LED candles these days, are the LED candles, are really good because they're safer. And not so much on the table, but in the bedroom.
Sure. The candles usually last longer than I do, though.
Oh, you do have a sense of humor.
Of course you have to.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know.
Oh, my Lord. So what? Getting to your practice and also the book, what are the most common overall macro complaints? People are just unsatisfied in their relationships sex-wise?
Well, the most common presenting problem, and it's been true for many years now, because I've been practicing for over 30 years.
Oh, no, you haven't.
Oh, yes, I have.
You look too young.
Oh, well, I am young at heart for sure. I'm a woman in her 70s. I admit this in my book. And my husband is also in his 70s, and we have a really hot sex life. And so we practice what I preach all
Excellent.
The time, and it makes all the difference.
Love it.
Yeah.
Did you have children? Do you have children?
Yes, but they're launched, you know.
Yes, of course.
I have a daughter and a son, and I have grandchildren, and it really is terrific to have the release and to connect like you can. So let's see. So the most common presenting problem, though, is mismatched desire, where one person has lower sexual desire than the other. If they both have low sexual desire, I typically don't hear from them.
Sure.
Because they're happy. They're happy. They may have a sexless marriage, but they're happy. But usually one person has a higher sexual desire than the other, and they want to get back on track. And so they come to see me. So that's the most common. Mismatched desire is the most common presenting problem. For men, it is premature ejaculation and erectile dysfunction. And for women, it's lack of orgasm, besides that, and sometimes the low desire that I referred to before.
So,
and there are lots
of
solutions for all of these things.
Yeah, I want to delve into one of them and try not to be too funny here. For the lack of orgasm for a woman, is that difficult for most men to take personally, or do most men understand that? You know, sometimes for women, I mean, I speak openly about this. I've had a very colorful life before I met my wife, and I dated a lot, and I was extremely sexually active. And I know some women, believe me, I don't think I was all that in bed. And, you know, I was a good, you know, hey, I believe that I'd like to please my partner. Like, I wasn't just in it for myself. I got actually enjoyment by, more so sometimes, by pleasing someone else. So I realized as I got older in my late 20s and 30s and 40s that sometimes, you know, you just can't please that person as much as you'd like to because, and I'll let you take this from here, doctor, because sometimes women, more so than men, just can't get to that climactic level.
Guys need to realize that he facilitates the orgasm, but he doesn't make her have it.
I feel like a UPS driver. Here's your box.
Yeah. but the woman, in order to reach orgasm, has to feel very safe in the relationship. She needs to be able to let go in order to have an orgasm. And the amygdala is the part of the brain that stores feelings, and especially fearful feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's had, for example, sexual abuse, to take it to the extreme, in her background, it may be much harder for her not only to be present, to be really in the moment, but to let go. So she has to feel really safe. Her amygdala needs to take a little nap for her to be really sexual.
Okay.
And for a woman to be orgasmic, she probably needs to practice on her own
sure.
first with self-stimulation.
Yeah.
And maybe even using a vibrator.
Couples are intimidated and feel that, oh, I'm not enough. But I've always been for like, hey, listen, however you need to get there, hopefully I'm in the room because, you know, it's going to be better. But if we need to do things solo, you know, while we're together, hey, it's still fun and still togetherness.
Oh, yes. And sometimes if one person watches the other masturbate, then it can be enlightening and it can be arousing.
Absolutely.
So it's a good thing. It's a very difficult thing for some couples to do. Sometimes I assign that as a homework assignment, the mutual masturbation thing.
Mm-hmm. Who has more of a problem with it, men or women?
Usually women. But it's normally such a private activity. But once the couple can break through and do that, it's often very... very much a turn on, and it's intimate,
big time,
because yeah, it really is. So
I'm going to share one of my lines that worked wonders when I was single.
Yeah, what was
all
that?
All single listeners out there,
yeah,
when I was dating somebody or just wanted to hook up with them, I would say to this woman, I would say in some lustful voice, hey, listen, I'm going to have you one way or the other, so if you like to be there to enjoy it, you should. If not, I'm going to enjoy it alone.
Oh, wow. You had quite the single life, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Well, you know.
It worked a lot of the times, too.
Of course. Well, you had some fun. And
now, is that your husband walking around naked with a jackhammer?
No.
Oh, vibrator. I'm sorry.
A vibrator.
I hear vibration sounds in the background.
You know, I worked when I was in Los Angeles, I worked at UCLA's Female Sexual Medicine Center. And what we discovered is that if women had not masturbated as teenagers, maybe because of religious prohibitions, mm-hmm. Then it was very difficult for them to reach orgasm. And it may be that those nerve pathways that go from the brain to the genitals were not established. So a vibrator, which can go way faster than any body part of your partner.
I don't know what videos you're watching.
So that's the solution, is to have a vibrator. And there's in these days of the pandemic, you know, sex toy sales have gone through the roof.
Oh, I should add that to the list of things you can't get.
Yeah.
Love right. In the time of Corona, advice from a sex therapist for couples in quarantine. My guest is Dr. Diana Wiley. She's also a host on the Progressive Radio Network. When does your show air, Dr. Diana?
It airs Eastern time at 5:00 on Tuesdays.
All right. So we're a day apart.
And it's called Love, Lust, and Laughter. And, yeah, I've enjoyed working with PRN all these years, and I bet you have too.
Absolutely, it's a great platform to share insight. Say insight, that's the name of my show, Insight.
Yes,
on,
I know, yes.
You know, just life, everything I share is everything I've experienced, but getting back to other things I've experienced, and you've experienced, and we all have experienced, because we're here, is sex and intimacy. Excuse me.
Yes.
So I was clearing my throat. I apologize about that. So when you see couples, especially nowadays via Skype, is it less intimate? I imagine for new clients, it may be a little bit awkward, but for existing clients, they probably transition well to being on computer. And do you find there are more pros than cons?
It helps lots of people to be resilient, and especially in these days. I think that there are some negatives for online, but it's all we can do today.
Sure.
I have some people that I've been seeing for quite some time in person before the lockdown in March. And so that transition wasn't so bad. But then there's some pluses. For instance, tomorrow I have a session with a couple in Germany.
But wunderbar.
Yes, and her partner is German, and she's originally from Seattle, so that's how she found me.
Fantastic.
So, I mean, it expands, right? Your horizons expand sure. when you can do this via Zoom or Skype. And so if some people like it all right. And as long I mean, we're doing this Zoom without visuals, but of course I always have the visuals because it's important to look at body language and how the face is and
vital.
Vital, yeah. Yeah. But
you should know that yes. I am a huge proponent of therapy. I've been in therapy, not regularly, excuse me, for the last, I don't know, probably 8 years. But before that, with all the things that happened in my life, brother died by suicide. I went through a depression, anxiety, panic attacks, all that stuff. And that's what started my run in therapy. And I think, and aside from that, the silver linings are many. But the fact that you can go into your room or be in front of your computer and talk to someone, I'm actually conveying these thoughts to someone who is a sort of a family member right now, every day, to talk to someone, to get everything off your chest, to have a neutral perspective, it's just, I can't define the worth and how much lighter you feel after a session and how much better of a person you will become. It may not be right away because sometimes you have to go through the thick to get through the prettier and thinner, but it is highly recommended by Mark Farrell.
I appreciate you're very articulate about this. And so through these years of therapy, you've become more self-aware and you know what you need and want and you can express it better. And you're more intuitive, I think. I think you're naturally a very high EQ person, emotional intelligence person.
You just called me high? No. I've had 5 cups of Joe, so maybe I am a little high.
Oh, okay. But to have more self-awareness is so important.
Sure.
And it really makes us better people and better partners.
It does. Hey, we want to get to a few more things before we run out of time here. Number one, I wouldn't be a good radio interviewer if we didn't talk about the digital age and porn, open marriages, relationships, etc. Let's start with porn. Is that something, obviously, that's obviously the magnitude of this industry is in the billions. So it's very, very popular. How popular is it with couples on an equal footing?
Well, if couples watch porn together and there is, then it can actually be, can't for some couples, it can be helpful because they can watch it and say, oh, yeah, let's try that. It can be inspiring. Usually this is porn that's female produced. My late friend, Candida Royale, was one of the first female producers. She was the first in 1984, the first female producer. Do you know her name, Mark?
Candida Royale? Is she still active in the business?
No, because she died of ovarian cancer.
Oh, geez, my apologies.
Yeah, no, she was a good friend for 20 years and over her lifetime produced some 20 films, but she was the pioneer where she looked to get real couples for her actors and she didn't even like to call her work pornography. It was more erotica, but it was porn. Anyway, where porn is a problem for couples is typically when the guy watches it in secret and does a lot of it, masturbation in front of porn,
sure.
and keeps it a secret. That's when it can be toxic for the relationship because the woman might discover it and she compares herself with the woman on the screen. And the guy says, no. I much prefer the live woman that I have. Mm-hmm. Come here, honey. So,
yeah.
But well, it's, you know, I imagine it can be a problem.
Absolutely. There are give and takes and maybe a woman or maybe a man be like, listen, if I'm not around and you need to fire up that phone or whatever, knock yourself out.
Yes, yes. So pornography, I think it can even be better, and I'm a little bit biased here, but I have narrated several sex education films like Great Sex for a Lifetime, which is targeted at baby boomers. And I stress narrated, I was not participating, but but these are explicit films, and it can really help couples who need more sex education. And most people do. I have a whole chapter, Learn More About Sex, with a lot of resources and books and audios. And if we have more knowledge about sex, we are often more confident. In fact, somebody did a study years ago wondering, do sex therapists have better sex than the rest of us? And it turns out we do. And why is that?
Because you bring your work home with you.
Yes, that too. But it's because we have more confidence, because we have more knowledge, and we have less anxiety about sex.
Yeah, you're cognizant of everything. You're in touch with, you know, and just like every other industry, though, I've had some terrible therapists. Terrible. I actually reported to the New York State License Board a therapist. And I have some therapists that are just, I just want to hug them. They're just great people. I've turned my therapist on my friends, and they're just, you know, oh my God, this person's great. So it's a relationship. It's a fit. And I told this person I was referring to a few minutes ago, a family friend, and this person is now seeing a therapist. I'm like, listen, don't get bummed out if online you don't think this person's good. They may be good. You just may not like this person. You don't have to love your therapist, but they have to be effective for you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And please.
Yes. Well, it's just, the fit is so important. And you should know that by the first session, really.
Yeah.
As a client to your therapist, you'll know if it's a good fit.
You know, if I had to do it all over again, there's a few things I would like to have considered. And therapy is one of them in terms of being a psychotherapist, because, you know, just be able to just get in the room and help somebody dissect their life and put it back together and just say, okay, man, you're good to go. And I know it's not that easy, of course, but it must be very, very therapeutic and rewarding for you on many levels.
It's deeply satisfying. And that's why, you know,
A double entendre. You were waiting to sneak in.
Deeply satisfying. Yes.
So we're almost out of time. One more thing. Open marriages, are they very common nowadays?
And, they're not. Well, these days, not so much. These are the days. These are the days to be monogamous and to figure out ways to enliven your sexual relationship. And that's what my book, Love in the Time of Corona, is all about. You know, to find ways to bring more sensual and sexual life to your relationship. But open relationships are tricky. It helps to have a really strong foundation in your own marriage, with really, especially your sexual relationship, and to have lots of communication about it before you try to open your marriage. And that's a whole nother show, Mark.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, we have to get together again, because this was fun. This was a lot of fun.
Well, I would enjoy that. It's pretty easy to do, you know, Progressive Radio Network.
Absolutely. And one more thing before we close out this great conversation. And I completely lost my train of thought, Dr. Diana.
Well, maybe can I interject the best website for me, I've added this website since the publication of the book, is DearDrDiana.com. And so it's drdiana.com, and it's an advice website, and people have sent in questions usually related to the pandemic and their sex life and what
Fantastic.
Do they do. Yes. So,
and that's free of charge. That's just a Q&A.
Oh yeah.
That's
great. Yeah.
That's very kind of you. So what I want to mention is that I want people to realize, and I know this is harder than it's easier said than done, I should say, is that don't get hung up in your physical being. Get off Facebook, get off social media, you are who you are. You're a beautiful person. That person's with you because you brought something to the table. You are attractive to them, attracted to them, and vice versa. Don't get hung up on your size, your bikini size. My pecs aren't as big as they should be. I can only do 10 push-ups. No. Be in that room and be in the moment with that person and forget about the rest of the world.
That's such good advice, Mark. You could have been a therapist. That's really good. Yeah, especially women get really hung up on.
And it's so easy too. You know, but it's all garbage. You know, it's all garbage. That's for sure. That's DrDianaWiley.com, her website, her new book, Love in the Time of Corona, Advice from a Sex Therapist for Couples in Quarantine. Dr. Diana, it's been a real pleasure. You are a gift as a therapist, a gift as a sex therapist, and now a gift as a colleague.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that, Mark. And it's been really good to spend this time with you too.
Okay, so now I'm going to set my stopwatch and you do the same. And let's see who can have sex the quickest. All the best to you, my friend.
And to you, Mark.
Talk to you soon now. All the best.
Bye-bye. Okay, good. Bye-bye.
So I know we didn't get to a few things that I teased in the program. My apologies. But you know what? When I'm talking about sex, I can't just hang that up. And, you know, sex trumps everything. I didn't talk about my puppy and the ramifications of having a puppy art. And I wanted to talk more about the DNC. Please do yourself a favor. If you didn't catch last night's show online, stream it. I'm sure the broadcast is probably online as well. The 10 o'clock when it starts live at 10 o'clock. And do yourself a favor. Please watch tonight's show, the last final DNC show. It's going to be amazing. I'm feeling very inspired. I've been feeling very, very down about our politics and our trajectory and our future in November. But, you know, we have to come together as a nation. We have to get this abysmal monster out of the office and work on this thing called democracy. All right, Jesse, roll that outro, my friend.